Well, as you know, this is a short series on giving, and it's our third message. And we're not after your money, but it's about using our money to the glory of God. Now, we looked at the parable of the talents, and amongst the talents the Lord has given to us is our money. My money is not mine, it's His. He hasn't given it to enrich me, but that I should use it to enrich His kingdom. Remember how Paul speaks to the Philippians. He says, your giving, my preaching, is a partnership. It's a partnership in the gospel. It's a partnership of equals. Because if you hadn't financially have supported me and my team, then we couldn't have got the message out as we did. So we use this talent called money to promote the spread of the gospel. So don't let the work of the kingdom here and beyond shrivel for lack of funds. And then we looked at our motive for giving. Paul says, for you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that you, through his poverty, might become rich. Our God is the giving God. His act of grace was the giving of his Son. He gave what he couldn't afford to give. His beloved Son. And Jesus took our poverty, that we might receive his riches. He embraced the poverty of the cross to make us rich beyond imagination. And therefore, says Paul, you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ. And if we do know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, how then can we deny him anything? How can we say no to Jesus? His act of grace is the motive for our act of grace, for our giving. Well, today, we need to get down to some practicalities. Maybe you've heard the first two messages and you thought, yes, I must sort out my giving, but you haven't got round to it. So how do we go about giving? Well, please come with me to our reading, 2 Corinthians chapter 8. And we're looking from verse 10 to chapter 9 and verse 5. It's a big chunk, so we're going to be moving through things quite quickly. Now, I hope you remember the context. Paul is making a collection among the Gentile churches to send famine relief to the suffering Jewish churches. And since in Christ, converted Jews and Gentiles have equal shares in God's salvation, what better way to cement their unity, the unity between Jew and Gentile, what better way to express their love, their oneness, than for the Gentile churches to send relief to the Jewish churches of Judea and Jerusalem. And who better to organize the collection than Paul, a Hebrew of Hebrews and the apostle to the Gentiles, the very embodiment of this new oneness. Now, if you remember, when the Corinthians first heard of the need, they were very keen to help. They were filled with good intentions. But that was a year ago. A year has passed. And they still haven't got round to it. So Paul, having supplied the motive to get going, to get giving, in verses 1 to 9, he now goes on to flesh out the practicalities of their giving. And Christian friend, maybe that's where you are. Filled with good intentions, but just somehow haven't got round to it. Well, we have four things to say this morning, 4 points. And point number one, says Paul, verses 10 to 12, get on with it. Verse 10, he says, and in this I give advice. He's saying, look, Corinthians, this is what's best for you. Here's my advice. Here's my judgment on the matter. And this I give advice. It is to your advantage not only to be doing what you began and were designed to do a year ago, but now you also must complete the doing of it. Get on with it. That as there was a readiness to desire it, so there also may be a completion out of what you have. You started well, you were raring to go. When the need came, you all put up your hands and said, yeah, we'll help. Well, says Paul, finish what you started. If you like, put your money where your mouth is. Turn your good intentions into concrete actions. You started well. Well, come on, Corinthians, finish well. Get on with it. Verse 11, so that there also may be a completion out of what you have. That's interesting, isn't it? Look at verse 12. Out of what you have. For if there is first a willing mind, it is accepted according to what one has, and not according to what one does not have. See what Paul is saying? Why do we sometimes put off our giving? Is it because we're unwilling? Well, no. We often put off giving because we feel, well, I haven't got much to give. There's not much there, and it's not going to make much difference. And perhaps we say to ourselves, when I've got more money, then I'll start giving. When I've got more, then I'll make up for it then. You ever thought like that? Are you thinking like that now? What says Paul? No, you get on with it now. For if there is first a willing mind, it is accepted according to what one has, and not according to what one does not have. What counts, says Paul, is not how much you give, but how willing you are to give it. God's not expecting you to give what you haven't got. He's not expecting a one-talent Christian to give like a five-talent Christian. But neither is he expecting the one-talent Christian to bury his talent in the ground. Christian friend, maybe you haven't got going because you feel, well, it's so little, I haven't got much to give. Well, God isn't asking us to give what we don't possess. God doesn't need big givers. He owns the cattle on a thousand hills. But what he's seeking is willing givers. You think what God can do with a little that's willingly given. A boy's lunch. There are 5 loaves, 2 fishes. Well, that's not going to go very far amongst the thousands here, is it? I mean, there's at least 5,000 men. Keep the lunch to yourself. You might as well eat it yourself. It's not going to go very far amongst this lot. But the lad with 5 loaves and 2 fishes, what does he do? He gives it willingly to Christ. Who knows what he might do with it? Or you think of the widow of Zarephath. There she is preparing her last meal for herself and her son. It's just a handful of flour. It's just a little oil. How on earth is she going to support Elijah, big, strong, strapping man? But a little, freely given, in God's hands is more than enough to support her, her son, and God's prophet, not just for one meal, but for months. A little freely given in God's hands goes a long, long way. So, Christian friends, don't hold back till you feel you've got something worth giving. Paul says, give now. Give in faith. Press your little into Christ's hands. Who knows what he might do with it? He might even give you more. Because what you have, you first gave to him. You remember the widow's mites. Luke tells us he looked up and he saw, Jesus looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury. And he also saw a certain poor widow putting in 2 mites, 2 little coins. It's next to nothing. So he said, truly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all. For all these, out of their abundance, have put in offerings for God, but she, out of her poverty, put in all the livelihood that she had. You see, the challenge is not how much we give, but how willing we are to give it. So says Paul, get on with it. Point number 2, giving and receiving. Look at verse 13. For I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened. Corinthians, you're not giving to impoverish yourself and to make others rich. It's about fairness, says the apostle. It's about giving and receiving. For I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but by an equality, that now at this time your abundance may supply their lack, that their abundance also may supply your lack, that there may be equality. You know, here's a cake. You've got 10 slices. They've only got 1. You've got plenty. They haven't got enough. So what do? Well, you give them 4 of your slices. That leaves you still plenty to live on. But now you won't go without, but they won't starve. And that's fair, says the apostle. Anyway, next time the tables might be turned. Maybe next time they'll give to you out of their abundance. It'll be their turn to help you. That their abundance may also supply your lack, that there may be equality. And maybe there Paul is hinting that the Jews, it was they who shared the gospel with the Gentiles, and if they have shared their spiritual abundance with you Gentiles, then it's only right for you Gentiles to share your material abundance with the Jews. Giving and receiving. And says Paul, it's biblical. Verse 15, as it is written, he who gathered much had nothing left over, and he who gathered little had no lack. He's talking about when they went out and gathered the manna. So in God's kingdom, in God's family, no one has too much and no one goes without. But Christian friends, this principle doesn't just apply to rich churches supporting poor churches. The principle applies equally within a church. So come with me to Acts chapter 2. We come to the Jerusalem church. This is the day of Pentecost. Peter just preached this incredible sermon. And chapter 2, verse 41. But then those who gladly received his word were baptized. And that day, about 3,000 souls were added to them. And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine, the apostles' teaching, and fellowship, in the breaking of bread, and in prayers. So these New Testament believers, they were devoted to the apostles' teaching, but it goes on to say, and fellowship, koinonia. They didn't go to church for inspiration and teaching and then get on with the rest of their lives. They were the church. The life of the church was a shared life. It was a community, a worshiping community. It existed 24/7. And in that life, they were devoted to each other. They shared everything. It was a life where there was giving and receiving. So, verse 46, so continuing daily with one accord in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, they ate their food with gladness and simplicity of heart. Breaking bread from house to house. Nobody said, hey, this is my food. They said, it's our food. Nobody said, hey, it's my house. I said, no, it's our house. God may have placed this house in my keeping, so I'm the steward of this house. I have the say-so of what goes on in this house, but what I have is to be used for the good of all. Koinonia. Giving and receiving. So what happened in the church family when the haves saw the needs of the have-nots? They did something about it. Verse 44. Now all who believed were together and had all things in common and sold their possessions and goods and divided them among all as anyone had need. So the principle that Paul expounds at Corinth, we share the cake, is the principle that goes on here, isn't it? It's giving and receiving. In Jerusalem, they shared the cake. Nobody went hungry. Turn over the page, Acts 4. It's obviously very important, isn't it? Luke keeps going on about it. Acts 4, verse 32. Now the multitude of those who believed were of one heart and of one soul. See, they're a worshipping community. They're together, koinonia. Neither did anyone say that any of the things he possessed was his own, but they had all things in common. And with great power the apostles gave witness to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and great grace was upon them all. Nor was there anyone among them who lacked. For all who were possessors of lands or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of the things that were sold and laid them at the apostles' feet. And they distributed to each as anyone had need. And Joseph, who was also named Barnabas by the apostles, which is translated son of encouragement, a Levite of the country of Cyprus, having land, sold it and brought the money and laid it at the apostles' feet. In that church, there were huge discrepancies of income. There were people who were fabulously rich and there were people who were dirt poor. But you see, as children of the giving God, you know, verse 33 isn't a sort of diversion from this whole sharing of things. We read, great grace was upon them all. It's because they were children of the giving God that they were giving people. It's because great grace was upon them that they gave freely to one another. And they viewed what they had as belonging to all. So those with 10 slices of cake freely gave to those who only had one. Giving and receiving. As Paul says, so there may be equality. And we understand that, don't we? When the family goes on holiday, does Dad say, hey, it's my car, I pay for it. You have to make your own way there. We're family. When the family sits down for a meal, does Mum say, I cooked this, I paid for this. If you want your food, you go and get your own. Say, no, we sit down at the same table. We're family. And in the family of the church, if we're joined to Christ, and we are, yes, then we're joined to each other. If we're children of the Father, and we are, yes. Yes, some people are nodding. I hope we're children of the Father. It means we're brothers and sisters. And if we're brothers and sisters, then there is giving and receiving. We share with one another, so there may be equality. So, whilst in a church all are to give, some are better placed to give more than others, aren't they? There are some people to whom God has given 5 talents of money. Well, then, says Paul, Romans 12, if you've been given that, if that's your gift, well, then give liberally. If God has given you a lot, then be liberal with what you have. And whilst in a church all are to give, some in the church are in a position where they need support. They need financial help. They need material help. So we shouldn't be embarrassed about receiving help and support from the church. Because that's the way it was at Jerusalem. That's the way God has set it up. Giving and receiving. But by an equality that now at this time, your abundance may supply their lack. Because in any church there are going to be some who have abundance and some who have lack. And that their abundance also may supply your lack. That there may be equality. If you receive this time, well, maybe next time it'll be your turn to give. Giving and receiving. Well, point number 3. Putting our money into the hands of others. It's a big chunk, this. It's verse 16 to 24, so we're going to move through it quite quickly. So please have it open in front of you. Follow it as we go through it. Putting our money in the hands of others. Now, Paul is sending 3 men to supervise the collection in Corinth. He's sending Titus, verse 16, which says, Paul is as good as me going myself. And besides, verse 17, Titus has already volunteered. And with Titus, verse 18, I'm going to send a well-known preacher of the gospel. He's been chosen by the churches. Everyone recognizes him. He's got a good standing amongst the churches. And finally, verse 22, another trustworthy brother from among Paul's own circle. So here are 3 godly, trustworthy, recognized men, if you like, an official delegation to organize the giving in Corinth. Now, why does Paul do it that way? Well, because the world is full of religious con men. And Paul wants to avoid any misunderstandings, any accusations. So far from Paul having direct contact with the money is being handled by these 3 trustworthy brothers. Verse 20, avoiding this, that anyone should blame us in this lavish gift which is administered by us, providing honourable things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. See what Paul's doing? He's at pains to avoid any finger pointing. You know, Paul's talking about a big gift, and a big gift comes in, and people say, oh, there he goes. He's just after your money, that Paul. Just wants the readies. He wants to avoid any sort of accusation, any sort of taint that he's after their money. So he's not just doing the right thing before the Lord, but he wants to be seen to be doing the right thing in the eyes of men. There's to be no hint of impropriety, no hint that Paul's on the fiddle. And therefore, if it's all done properly, when then the gift is handed over, the cynics are silenced, God will get the glory, and Jews and Gentiles will be brought together. That's what he says in verse 19, which is administered by us to the glory of the Lord himself. So when we give it, God gets the glory, and to show your ready mind. It just shows how much you love and are concerned for these Jewish believers. So I'm sending three men. They're organizing it. They'll take it from your hands. So I don't have any contact with it. So there's no hint of me being up to no good. But, says Paul, verse 23, when these men come, please, no one make a song and a dance about it. They're coming to supervise this giving. Well, you know, don't say, oh, what right have they got to come and supervise this giving? Giving, that's personal. Giving, that's private. You know, Titus, mind your own business. Go away, push off. No, says Paul, no. When they come, show to them, verse 24, and before the churches, the proof of your love and of our boasting on your behalf. Here's your opportunity when they come. Not to get all prickly and personal and say, my giving's private, keep away. No. It's your opportunity to show just how loving and generous you are. So, Christian friends, they were to place the money into the hands of trustworthy men. And those trustworthy men would administer the gift on behalf of the Corinthians. It avoids any misunderstandings. It avoids any suspicions. And, of course, it's to make sure the money goes where it's needed. But, Christian friends, again, this principle doesn't just apply to one church supporting other churches. The principle applies equally within a church. Let's go back to Acts chapter 4. Do you remember what we read? Acts 4, verse 34. Nor was there anyone among them who lacked, for all who were possessors of lands or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of the things that were sold and laid them at the apostles' feet, and they distributed to each as anyone had need. And again, we read in verse 37, Barnabas does the same, doesn't it? He brought the money and laid it at the apostles' feet. See what's going on here. They sell their land, they sell their houses, they get the money, they bring the money, and they place it at the apostles' feet. They place it there, and then they let go. And they leave it to the apostles, and of course later the apostles, supported and aided by the deacons, to decide how and where the money should be spent. So biblical giving is all about putting our money in the hands of trustworthy men and then letting go. And then the church, through its leadership, through those men it's appointed, they distribute the money as and according to the needs. That's why we read 1 Timothy 3 that elders and deacons are not to be greedy for money, because if you lay the money at their feet and then they say, hey, let's have, you know, a jolly to Brazil and go and visit some missionaries, and we need a jacuzzi in the vestry. You want men who are going to be trustworthy. So the lion's share of our giving goes to the church. It's not private giving. It doesn't go from individual to another individual. We give it to the church and we let go. They laid it at the apostles' feet. That's it. They walk away, and they leave it with those appointed to handle the money. They lay them at the apostles' feet, and they distribute it. The apostles distribute it to each as anyone had need. In other words, when I give, there are no strings attached. I give to the church, I let go. I don't pick and choose. Now, why is that God's pattern for biblical giving? Why does God say it should be like that? Well, think about it. If giving is just from one individual to another individual, if giving is just private, Just think about that. Here's a rich brother. He gives directly to a poor brother. How does the poor brother feel? Well, he might well feel indebted, mightn't he, to the rich brother. He might feel that somehow he owes the rich brother something because the rich brother's been so generous to him. And then, of course, later on, the rich brother may say, I'm going to call in a favor. And the poor brother feels he can't refuse because he feels indebted to the rich brother. It's done like that so that the poor aren't placed in the pockets of the rich. That's how the world operates, isn't it? The rich have the poor in their pockets. No, not in the new humanity, not in the kingdom, not in the church. So giving isn't from one individual to another individual. It's given and let go. Or you might have another situation where a rich brother gives personally to a poor brother. Okay? The rich brother has no strings attached. He's just sort of happy to give. But actually, what nobody knows is actually there's someone in the church who's in a far worse position. Nobody sees, nobody knows, no one's seen it. And the person who's in a far worse position gets neglected. Often the leadership are aware of needs that aren't generally broadcast. That's why in this church we have the Benevolent Fund. It's here for just those situations. So that the leadership on behalf of the church can give to a brother or sister in need. And no one else knows about it. The money, the church's money, but it's given where it's needed. A brother or sister is in an extreme situation or great need. And it can be given and no one else need know. Or you can think about maybe a rich brother, let's have a rich sister. A rich sister gives directly to the pastor, who then doesn't preach, gets a particular passage and think, oh, if I preach that as I should preach it, I'm going to offend my rich benefactor. You know, he who pays the piper calls the tune. I'm glad I don't know what anyone gives in this church. I'm no clue. Or you imagine if our giving has strings attached. So Mrs. A says, I'm only giving if it goes on the buildings. And Miss B says, I'm only giving if it goes to the minibuses. And Mrs. C says, we need women workers in this church. Which is fine, we do. We need women's workers in this church. But I'm only giving if it goes to the women's workers. Mr. D loves flowers. All his giving is going to go to the flowers. And Mrs. E says, I'm not giving till we get a church cat. Now you think about that. It's a recipe, isn't it, for chaos, suspicions, resentment. So Christian friends, we give as a church. We give to the church. We hand it over to those charged with the responsibility. And then what do? We let go. Well, I think of that new, I mean, someone said they've sold lands and houses. I mean, how much is that? And they come and they say, there you are, at the feet of the apostles, and then they walk away from it. That's biblical giving. We give it to trustworthy people charged with the responsibility, and we let go. Okay, number four. Planned giving. Chapter 9 and verses 1 to 5. Again, we'll move through this quite quickly. Chapter 9, verse 1. It says, Paul, now concerning the ministering to the saints, it's superfluous for me to write to you. Now, I don't need to convince you, says Paul, about the importance of this gift. You know the importance. I don't have to bash on about it. And verse 2, I know you're willing. In fact, since last year, I've been boasting to the Macedonians about just how zealous you are. And in fact, as I've been boasting to them about how zealous you are, your zeal, or what I thought was your zeal, has actually stirred them up. But now, says Paul, verse 3, a word in your ear. Sort this out, because I've been saying how willing and generous you are, but I'm afraid when the time comes you won't be ready. Hence, that's why I'm sending Titus, that's why I'm sending the others, to get it all going. Look at verse 4, says Paul, just imagine, after all you've said, Yeah, we're ready. We're going to be giving. We're generous. After all you said, I turn up with some of the Macedonians. Remember the Macedonians, the poor Macedonians, the people who gave beyond their means to give? Well, imagine I turn up, says Paul, after all that you've said, with some of the Macedonians, only to find it's all been hot air. And nothing's been done. Now, says Paul, I'd feel ashamed. But not to mention how you're going to feel. So sort it out. Verse 5. Therefore, I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren to go to you ahead of time, these three men, and prepare your generous gift beforehand, which you had previously promised, that it may be ready as a matter of generosity and not as a grudging obligation. Oh, you just imagine, can't you? There's a knock at the door. The Corinthians peep through the net curtains and think, oh, there's Paul there. He's got some of the Macedonians with him. And we haven't sorted the collection out. We haven't done it yet. Quick, everyone, turn out your pockets. And instead of a well-organized gift, it's just an embarrassed whip round. Instead of it being willingly given, it's been given out of guilt. They all feel terrible. Well, where's the glory to God in that? That it may be ready as a matter of generosity and not as a grudging obligation. In other words, Christian friends, plan your giving. And Paul has told them and us how. Just turn back a few pages to 1 Corinthians. Because in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, he actually talks about this gift. Look at what he says, 1 Corinthians chapter 16. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given orders to the churches of Galatia, so you must do also. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there may be no collections when I come. And when I come, whomever you approve by your letters, I will send to bear your gift to Jerusalem. But if it's fitting that I go also, they will go with me. This is Paul planned giving. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside. The first day of the week. The day when the church meets. You give together, says Paul. You give as a church. You lay something aside. And you let go of it. In other words, says Paul, you need to give. It needs to be regular, systematic giving. In 21st century terms, you might say a standing order. Regular, systematic. And since the tax man is willing to pay back the tax on our gift, we want the tax man to give it back, don't we? That's a nice thought. Give it back, give it back. We make full use of gift aid. So what is given, we get the tax back. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside. The first day of the week. Okay, it's when they meet. So give when you meet. But when are they paid? Well, they would have been paid on the last day of the week. So says Paul, before you've had the chance to spend it, lay something aside. In other words, give to the Lord the first part of your income, and what's left over is for everything else. It's not the first part of our income is for everything else, and what's left over we give to the Lord. First things first. The first part goes to the Lord, first day of the week. He says, give before you've had a chance to spend. Which is why, of course, it's better to think in terms of fixed proportions rather than fixed amounts. Which is why Paul says, verse 2, that each of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper. Because one week it may be very tight. You can't give as much, but you can still give the same proportion. The next week the Lord prospers us. We have abundance. We still give the same proportion, but of course in monetary terms it's going to be much bigger. Because it comes from a bigger cake. In other words, don't set up standing orders and then forget them. And years passed. We are to review our giving regularly. So Christian friends, planned giving, this is what Paul is saying. So there's to be a fixed day, a fixed proportion. So decide, first of all, what you can give, and then you live on the rest. and it's a proportion that's regularly reviewed. So my giving is not to be the result of impulse or the result of guilt. You know, oh, I haven't given, I feel terrible about this, I ought to give. No, Mrs. Paul, you think about it, it's careful. I mean, we spend our lives planning things, don't we? So he says, plan your giving. Think about it, plan it, pray about it, and then do it. And also he says something else, doesn't he? Verse 2 of chapter 16, on the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there may be no collections when I come. And the same point is in 2 Corinthians 9, verse 5. He says, therefore I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren to go to you ahead of time and prepare your generous gift beforehand, which you had previously promised, that it may be ready as a matter of generosity and not as a grudging obligation. We give ahead of time, beforehand. See, sometimes what people do, they look at the church accounts and they say, well, there's loads in there. Got a big surplus. There's enough there. And therefore, my giving will go elsewhere. Well, first of all, we've established already, haven't we, that our giving, our lion's share of our giving goes to the church. That's biblical. That's what they did in the New Testament. That's what they did at the Church of Jerusalem. It goes to the church. But don't look at the church accounts and say, oh, we got surplus, I'll give it somewhere else. It sounds fine, doesn't it? But then, of course, when it comes to maybe special plans or particular needs, maybe we need more, we've been talking, haven't we, more full-time workers. Tim's gone to East Street. We need to look now for more workers and building plans and so on. When we come to those things, we find the money's not there. Now, of course, we know, doesn't it? Money does follow a vision. We all understand that. And it's right to have, you know, special gift days and so on. But says Paul, if you keep giving, and it's planned giving, and it's beforehand, and it's ahead of time, that's the language he uses, at the end of the day, there'll be more stored up, won't there? We'll have saved more. And we'll therefore be able to do more. If we plan our giving. If we prepare beforehand, ahead of time, then we'll be able to do more as a church than we can do. So don't think, oh, got a surplus, that looks okay, we'll give elsewhere. So Christian friend, maybe it's time to sit down and think about giving. Giving's always embarrassing, isn't it? Preaching about giving is always embarrassing. It's part of the culture of this country, isn't it? Giving's sort of private. When I was a kid, one of the first things I learned, you never ask anyone about money. It's like, it's one of the most taboo things. It's a taboo subject, isn't it? So, but actually, the Bible's very unembarrassed about it. As we shall see when we go next week, it says a great deal about money and the gospel. It says almost about as much about money as it does about prayer. So the Bible's unembarrassed. So Christian friend, maybe it's time that we should just sit down and think about our giving. And pray about it. And plan it. And review it. And with a settled conviction before God, well, God showed us, he says, well, you give the first part of your income. Give a fixed proportion. Don't live on then and then what I've got left. But what will I give God first and then I'll live on the rest? A fixed proportion for the work of the church to enrich the work of the kingdom here. And beyond. Well, Christian friends, a sermon on giving. It's not massively exciting, is it? You know, you go to the hymn book, go to the hymn book, look for a hymn after what you've preached on and think, well, aren't there hymns on giving? It's not a sort of, and maybe after a sermon on giving, maybe you feel, I don't want to really sing a hymn on giving. But just imagine, if, as Paul says, we got on with it now, and that our giving means others receive, and that we put it into the hands of the church through its appointed people. We let go, no strings attached. And imagine if we gave in a prayerful, planned way, giving to the Lord the first of what we have. It may only be an ordinary sermon, but if it changes our giving, and that giving is used for the work of the kingdom, who knows what the Lord might do with our five loaves and two fishes.